this idea that's up here in the left-hand corner. If I go to the average brainstorming session with friends, everybody's sort of sitting there waiting for the other person to be quiet so they can start saying their idea. But have any of you ever done improv? So if you know how to do improv, which is certainly an acquired skill, it is usually a listening skill in the sense that you have to listen to what the other person is saying so that you can build on it, rather than to say what you were came into the room wanting to say. So I find that brainstorming and panel discussions can really go better if you can do that, but it's definitely an acquired skill, so you don't have to.
So, as I said in my opening blurb, I was thinking, oh, the place that you need to go is Africa and start a cell phone company, because that's where the action is, because mobile, everyone's going to be accessing the internet through handheld devices, and in Africa, these things are not just a convenience, they're a lifeline, so that's going to be a huge growth. So I'm very discouraged, sort of discouraged, and Mr. Dyson talked about how we had to be connected to the big payment. My desire, I mentioned in previous sessions, I just need a map of the territory that explains to me who the players are and what's going to happen over the next 10 or 20 years in the battle for the soul of the internet. So, I want to ask, you might self-identify yourself when you say something. So we don't have to go through a long introduction saying. And to make this exciting enough, more people will come in. Yes.
My name is Mark. I'm a grad student. Sorry. that actually the government had done their share, so the taxes had gone down because they had a certain target. And the device manufacturers, I'm not just speaking about the cell phone, the other, so it seems that the technology hardware price had gone down. But still, that was kind of the doubling, was the price for that communication data and the banking of the carriers. So the government is not paying for that always.
Nokia totally want a bottoms-up approach to this whole thing. Just get those handsets out there and let the people in the villages just put up their networks. So you did,
for navigating files that was exactly Apple's cover photo. interesting thing that they, that the Linux weenies at Red Flag Linux in China had already knocked off Apple's cover flow rather well. And these things are going to be coming out at, during the Olympics. The really interesting thing about them is that they are generative in Jay-Z's sense. They are not locked down. They're open. Most or all of them. And Intel wants to push this. So that's sort of an interesting development, and it contrasts with what Apple so far at least has been doing with the iPhone as a as an appliance device, to use Jay-Z's terms.
Acceptable now because we recognize the important thing we need to do is decompose the problem. One reason where the rail is one thing, but the other big battle is the DRM battle. That in order to control the bits, we're sort of trying to, you know, maintain like hearing aids. You need a DRM hearing aid in order to listen to Happy Birthday to make sure they pay for the copyright. So it's really the question of how do we get past a world which is based on these accidental properties of control. Just as, you know, we've had a lot of, you know, philosophical religious things based on the assumption of direct and indirect action being very distinct. So a whole set of realignments coming, as you understand, how to solve problems in a far more distributed way.
Okay, so
the thing I forgot to ask is what is the battle line? And you're saying the battle line is the higher up, people who think top down and...
Well, that's my point, like, if that's a sharper distinction. But it's really a question of what is it, I try to understand what kind of systems can sort of composite to form a coherent whole. You know, when does individual behavior composite, when does it become, you know, dissonant? And this has to do with, you know, and the way I put it is Darwin anticipated genes, because the mechanism in order for his evolution to be convergent and work, you have to have digital ability to regenerate and to make sharp distinctions, otherwise things sort of fade away. So the whole set of mathematical, philosophical things about how systems composite, I think they came together with digital signaling packets. That's sort of the original groundwork, and then accidentally Ethernet, you didn't even bother doing traditional networking. Only later when you look back you understand, you know, this process, we're sort of coming to terms with the implication of the phone companies trying to get a signal across the country and realizing instead of keeping everything phased, they created digital, not realizing it was the end of that control.
Yes. Okay, so the forces of darkness, are they, are these guys, nobody's mentioned Google here. Is Google good, bad, good now, evil later?
Why would you think it's so simple? As good or evil?
Certainly not. Somebody last night at dinner said, well, you know that the laws of capitalism are that eventually Google will become a problem, but right now it's good.
I'd just like to add that I think that it's almost always a mistake to speak of a large company is a single thing. They're not. I see in some cases like Apple, which is very, very controlled by one individual, that might be different. But with something like Google, it's a big, flat, very varied company doing many different things for many different reasons that have some coherency to them. But it's, you know, I mentioned Intel earlier, you know, I mean, I write for Linux Journal, I work on open source, and yet one of the most important figures in the part that I work with is Kim Cameron and his team at Microsoft. The company on the whole has been against open source for a long time, but Kim and his folks have actually worked to create open source alternatives to their products because they know they need them in the marketplace. But that's a small part of the company. So, you know, just a point about characterization.
I appreciate the comments, Doc, about the characterization. I was in your session last time about framing, and I think especially in something as contentious as this, when you say in the force of the darkness, that implies that there's a right solution. And you made the point, and I think it was very accurate, that we really do not know how to deal with this emergent thing, social phenomenon that's been enabled by the technology that we use. I'm from the intelligence community, so I fall in that camp, if you want to characterize me that way. But that then cuts off debate, and I'm going to be here to learn from you. The serious part of this is that all of those forces, whether CIA, NSA, FCC, whatever, they all have a responsibility, a public responsibility, and to have them simply demonized in this community, that's not very helpful for sparking the debate. It also makes it harder for us to participate in it.
these are entities that are actively working to maintain the relatively closed status quo nature of the telecommunications apparatus.
Well, certainly, you would say the forces of conservatism. Conservatism can be good.
In the sense of conservation, yes. And I know that there's two precautionary principles that are working here, and one of them is to preserve the old way of doing business because it worked in the old way, and it was a sense of stability. Then there's also this brand new discovery that's wonderful and is the reason why everybody's at this conference. And we want to preserve that, what makes the internet wonderful and special too. So both of those are precautions that we need to take, that Tom and I think that agree both need to be respected.
Well, with us principal scientists of Verisign, I'm feeling somewhat slighted as not being the, the thing here is the question of whether you exercise power, whether your position gives you power, and whether you're accountable. And one of the things that I spend a lot of time trying to do when I'm designing systems is to work out what the internal processes are, what the accountability mechanisms are, what happens if this person defects, what happens if multiple people defect. I have a vast amount of power, but I spend a lot of time making sure that my employees can't abuse it, because at the end of the day, everything is outsourced, because no one single person can do everything. So you have those, you outsource control to your employees, and they're exercising power on your behalf, and a defection by one of those people is just as damaging as a defection by the institution. The other point I would make is the single biggest force of conservatism I face is my legacy code base. I'm a prisoner of what we did 10 years ago. And for a company like Microsoft, they're a prisoner for what they did 20 years ago. Very difficult to change. United Airlines, US Airlines, they're prisoners of what people did 50 years ago.
Yes. As a
big fan of Silicon Valley, I like the idea that every time there's a new idea, you can start a new company that has no code base and no history. Annalise Opportunity wrote a great book comparing Boston and Silicon Valley in this regard. But what's Verisign? Does Verisign have a dog in this fight? I guess it definitely do.
Well, actually, we've sold a few of the dogs recently.
How what the limits are, what the capabilities are. You'd also, I think we might be able to agree here,
wary, in the sense that after listening to all the difficulties of overcoming the infrastructure in this country, I suddenly said, oh, well, Africa is the green field, but now there's not a lot of money in Africa. So that was, so my question, would a budding entrepreneur ever try anything in the third world, or is it better, we've got a better tradition of freedom here, we just have a lot of contending infrastructure?
If that number becomes well known. So
the fact that there are real malicious people out there is significant, and they're making a determined battle for the net, and there are some governments out there that are helping them.
Well, that's not why the, I think where the discussion going is, and I value it a lot, in fact, and what I see happening is the shift of knowledge from secrecy and from a few in the poor, it goes back to the cell phone distribution. The poor, you know, the poor changes the shift, like the economist said a few weeks ago, it went from the rich people had laptops and wire connection broadband. Now the poor with a cell phone in their hand are almost on an equal plane. So you end up with a battle for knowledge that is the real battle space, I think. Who gets the best information fastest and the most accurate? And as he just mentioned, that ends up just being like any civil society where you end up in a power play and the criminals try to do it the easy fashion. So you are in a world of knowledge has to have nots, and that's driving monetary base to it, which is why the criminals love it so much. That's why there's been peace on the internet for the last few years because the criminals are making money on it.
It's back there.
Yes. I work for the defense establishment also, and I think the notion of...
We have the access.
This is it. Not the access of evil, the access of good. It's like,
we have the war thing and look what happened.
The point being, I think any notion that the government is an adversary is entirely misplaced. I think that the reason the internet is so strong and everything is because the government deliberately stayed out of it. It was only then when people behaved badly in the sandbox that they needed some adult supervision that the government comes in and passes child internet laws and so forth. You know, that was a purposeful decision. The government did not want to be a ruler, so to speak, over the territory. So I disavow any thought that government is negative at all on the internet, you know.
Yeah.
And if I could just say one more thing, I think it's a great tool to ferret out the bad, you know, and as witnessed by, you know, the activities that are out there, because people do expose themselves in stupid ways, you know, that are easily identified. That's all.
Your government, which I regard as being a legitimate government, is currently becoming oppositional with another government which has something of a democratic process but a very clearly flawed one. And I think that over the next 10 years we're going to be seeing a cold internet war, because you know, we can see them ramping up the cyber warfare capability, we can see them making attacks on other countries to suppress propaganda, whatever, that they don't like. There are certain governments that are looking to the net as a venue for having low intensity, deniable warfare.
Now, but who are they? That's what I'm wondering.
Oh, Russia.
Oh, China, Russia, all the open source. China, Russia, you know, Mike is in a North Korea, and he's on microphone. Yeah, I'm having a button problem here.
So. Back in the back there.
Thanks. I'm Vedi Malkovsky, I'm with ICANN. So, just a point here to the gentleman from the defense department. The governments actually are influencing not only when, you know, the kids are playing and they don't behave properly. A good example would be the .xxx top level domain, which even though there was not a particular government officially announcing their position, there were a number of European governments which said it, that they are against such a top-level domain because it promotes the existence of pornographic materials on the internet. Now, I guess nobody here doubts that there is pornography on the internet, and it probably is more than 50% of the traffic. So I was on the board of ICANN at this time, and I voted actually for the establishment of this domain because I thought it's completely hypocritical to kind of say, oh, no, if we create this domain. But that's one thing. The second thing, though, and I want to point out to Philip here about the Russian government, and we are entering into a Cold War. There is no, at this point, the only governments that can actually be threat for the developed countries, let's say, are governments which are coming from not so developed countries. In other words, citizens are doing business online, you're not going to engage your country into a war with somebody else, cyber war, just because your citizens and you will suffer the same damage. It's basically like the thing with the nuclear weapons. But if you don't have any business in the country, what's the big deal? I mean, I know countries in Eastern Europe and Central Asia, which this is not a crime to go and hack somebody, some evil American imperialist bank account and just get all the money out of it. So I don't think this is a governmental policy. I just think it's a policy of, this is not a crime, so let's do it.
Some bot master.
protected by the constitution. There are other situations, for example, someone is an HIV positive and he wants to research things. If this information leaks, the society, which may not be tolerant to HIV positive people, may actually cause damage to the person. So this is just one example. But then there is also the rule that under the new European directive, internet service providers are obliged to keep the log files who, when, and from where had access for up to 1 year. I mean, every country decides differently, but it's like between 6 months and 18 months. And this helps in the real fight with the cyber criminals or people who hack computers or whatever. And talking about it, there was a case a few months ago when somebody was hacking a computer of the Bulgarian government. It was coming from Russia. They contacted the Russian Interior Ministry, DHS. The Russian Interior Ministry found out that the attacker was actually situated in the same building where the computer was attacked. So he was basically hacking a Russian computer and then hacking their own. And they managed to capture this guy, and it took them like really a couple of hours.
Yes.
I think this just jumping back on the anonymity, not for our friend from ICANN on the spot, but surely the anonymity of domains now is becoming a huge problem. And there's 60 to 80% of all malware searches from probably one or two British brands, which actually handle privacy, and you can get no information on ownership of those domains or who actually. Registrars are even worse in some senses, and it seems like ICANN is even widening out that support, so it's even more easy to have lots of registrars and anonymous forms.
Yes.
People want anonymity, but there are limitations. Nobody wants to have an anonymous bank. You don't want to put your money in it. Actually, people have tried that. Turned out to be a bad idea, the banks disappeared. I don't think that you want to be allowed to be an anonymous bank customer. Once you start to step away from financial dealings, there are still types of accountability that you want. I don't want to have, you know, I filter /not so that anonymous coward posts just don't come up. Because, yes, but everybody's pseudonymous on /not. So I think that there's kind of like this quality thing, and one of the things that gets me about cryptographic anonymity of the type that you get with Ctrl is that that is anonymity that goes far beyond the constitutional issue that Scott was talking about, in that the Constitution doesn't allow you to be anonymous when you call in fire in the theatre. It doesn't allow you to be anonymous when you go out on an internet-arranged date with somebody, and then they're never seen again. So there are real points where you want to have controls in the system and agents that can unmask anonymity in the case where real violations have taken place and there must be consequences. And so it's a balance of anonymity. It can't be absolute, and that's why the cryptography approach really doesn't give you much leverage.
Yes.
Just to respond to that quickly, I think that the issue at hand is not necessarily one of whether anonymity in all dealings is something that needs to be resolved, but rather the question of whether the network ought to be the place in which we do it. And I think that Tor is not so much a statement that everyone should be anonymous in all of their conversations and all of their dealings, but rather a statement that the network, by its very nature, should not be disclosing information about the individuals who use it by virtue of their IP address, their ISP, etc. And it seems to me that it's possible to envision a world where the ends actually require authorization without requiring the network to perform that service.
That's why I think you identity management is the new and upcoming piece here. Government tries sometimes to do things that concerned that they're going to get something out. So how do you do the identity management to make sure this works well without jumping into the privacy?
This raises a question that I often ask myself, is somebody trying to impede the use of encryption? I'm sorry to be paranoid about it, but every 5 years I get myself all geared up with PGP, and then I'll try to find one other person who uses it, and I can't find them. And so I've been told by my, let's say, conspiracy-minded friends that, well, somebody went to Microsoft and told them it would be a bad idea to deploy that in a box. So it's encryption. I guess encryption, like an anonymity, is a battle line.
Actually, usability has become the hottest topic in security at the moment. It's a really hard topic because, you know, I started going to the conferences and I was told I was an expert, which is sad because I know nothing about it. But you can have usable encryption for email. I outline it in my book, The Dot Crime Manifesto. Critical mass together to develop a client that's going to implement this. If you look at things like domain keys identified mail, one of the things about domain keys identified mail is that we have millions, hundreds of millions of people now signing every email that they send, and they don't know that they're doing it. Everybody who's sending through Yahoo and Gmail are signing their email now. And we can apply the same technology to have automatic encryption. Actually, part of it comes that PGP has this very individual-centered approach, and it's all about me and Alice. And well, actually, when you start to look about your real confidentiality concerns, that's not what it is. In that, I don't want spammers to be able to send me encrypted malware. So it's got to go through the spam filter. It's got to go through the malware filter.
Yes.
Your question on the Microsoft Secure Box. Encrypting box. That was removed not because some government wanted it removed, but because Microsoft's commercial customers wanted it removed. They didn't want a situation where an employee could hide things in their laptop without the employer knowing what's there. They don't want people running off with stuff that way, taking it out of the enterprise. They also don't want a situation where somebody gets run over by a truck they can't recover. So it was removed on very strong pressure from Microsoft's commercial customers.
Well, we can't let ourselves get fooled in the encryption the discussion either. Encryption's great, point to point, you know, closed net, but the sheer volume and everything else in encryption to itself, it goes back to, you know, assuredness of who is communicating.
Actually, just moving back and linking back to the anonymity debate, a lot of people talk about being anonymous online. Well, what about my ability to claim my own identity online? And in the previous session, I plugged OpenID, which is an open system that we're getting together to allow people to claim the same identity on multiple blocks. And that's important because it changes the balance of power. At the moment, okay, Josh Marshall, good guy, but he's the person who controls the debate at Talking Points Memo. Commenters there are second-class citizens. But once you have the ability to claim the same identity commenting at multiple sites, that means that people can create a lit log of all your comments at all those multiple sites, and suddenly that's become a blog. And suddenly you've become a first-class citizen, and suddenly the blogosphere has become democratized. It's no longer a controlled discussion where only one person has the speaking point.
Yes,
I actually wanted to ask whether we have put the blocking of traffic as one of the battles of the internet. Block to block the traffic. And I will tell you why I'm asking the question. The Max Planck is just released today, actually. It was concluded on May 15th, so yesterday. There is a world map of the
start with the U.
United States. The Comcast and Cox are the two biggest ISPs in the world that block torrent traffic. I mean, so, and China, for example, or Russia are not. I mean, one can argue a lot that, you know, it's illegal content, but there are always arguments that, you know, you don't know what content is there.
So is Cox blocking torrent right now?
It's blocking, yeah, out of 151 hosts, it's blocking 82, so about 50%.
Oh, I guess I'll have to cancel my Cox account.
Yes, it's in red.
much. I've learned a lot.